All right, sound good. Meeting is called to order, and please proceed. Yes, call attendance first, I assume.
Let me read some opening words first. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Welcome to our virtual meeting. We're going to cover a few basic items before beginning. If you lose connection at any point during the meeting, you can reconnect by clicking the link or calling the number in your original email. Members of the committee, if you're able, please activate your video for purposes of quorum and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Staff, if you're able, please activate your video when you're speaking. The chair and committee staff are responsible for muting and unmuting committee members. Members can rename themselves if they wish to add pronouns after their name. Please use the raise hand feature when you would like to be recognized to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. Any roll call, all participants will be unmuted briefly. Staff, click raise hand when you're asked a question. The chair will do his best to call on committee members in the order in which hands are raised. Lowering your hand will take you out of the queue. Members of the public who have registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon. Staff will tell you when your time is up. After speaking, a member of the body may ask you a question. If you need to share any documents with the board, with the committee, please send it to the email listed on the agenda. Please do not use your video. Thank you, Chair. The floor is yours.
Great, thank you very much. So I think it's a good point that when video is available for folks to turn it on, that would be great to know, folks are actually here. So has everyone had a chance to review
Let's do the roll call first. See attendance, call attendance, please.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay, Sean Gear.
Present.
Sean Gear is present. Michelle Probst.
Here.
Michelle is present. Kelly Kearns.
Present.
Kelly is present. Brock Woods.
Here.
Brock is present. Thank you, Chair. We have quorum.
Excellent. All right, great. And so has everyone had a chance to look at the minutes from December 10th? Everyone approve?
I move we approve the minutes,
Can I get a
Mr. Brock?
second?
I'll second.
Great. Thank you, Kelly. All right. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion to approve minutes from December 10th, 2024. He's approved. So excellent. And so, do we have public comment?
We have people registered to speak on agenda item 4, so you may want to
Yep.
call them when you start the public hearing.
That sounds great. Hopefully everyone's up to speed. Are there any recusals? Okay. I'm seeing negative, so we can move forward. So can we move ahead with public hearing?
Yeah, you just declare it open.
It is open. Yeah, let's proceed.
I think we have people registered to speak on this item. Did you see the registrant report I sent you?
Yeah, the
It's
one
in your email.
just sent out. I'm trying to open that, so I do not have that. If you can help me on that one, that would be great.
Okay, we have a couple of people registered, and the first person is Tim Meisenheimer.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Tim Eisenheimer, Operations Manager for Madison Gas and Electric. Here is part of our yearly pruning permit application according to MGO 10.101. We've been applying for this permit. I believe this is our 25th or 26th year now. We met with City of Madison Forestry, got their okay, sent out 3,000 postcards to City of Madison residents, notified alders, sent them maps they posted onto their blogs. Didn't get very many questions this year, didn't get much follow-up from the City of Madison. It's pretty standard practice. We've done this quite a few times. So for people that were wondering, the affected areas will be pruning the Sassy Marquette neighborhood, west side out by Gammon Road, Cottage Grove Road, and then some of the north side around Sherman and Aberg. We follow the most recent addition to the A300 pruning standards, and we follow other ISA BMPs as needed. We don't remove scaffold branches from city trees anymore unless they're structurally deficient, and then we consult with City of Madison Forestry before doing that. We've also discussed all areas with City of Madison Forestry staff to make sure we're not over pruning trees. One final note is our duty of care does require us to contact City of Madison Forestry staff when one of our arborists finds a tree that may be hazardous, that we don't deem hazardous. All customers will receive some sort of notification, either a postcard or a door card before we prune in their neighborhood. Should be noted again this year that each year we prune city trees, we prune fewer and fewer, lots of as the ash trees and the Norway maples have aged out, we have less pruning to do. And all of the trees that we prune are looked at by ISA certified arborists before we do any pruning. Thank you very much.
Good deal. Thank you, Tim. Does anyone have questions about this? I know it was recommended for approval. Kelly, I see your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious, Tim, on the list of addresses that you sent out, are those just in the area to be pruned, or have you already gone through all of those neighborhoods and identified exact trees that are being pruned? And so this is a list of the exact trees that are being pruned.
No, we don't identify exact trees. We mail them to, I think this year we probably mailed them to about 5,500 customers. Pretty much everyone that's within 200 linear feet of where we expect to prune city trees got a mailing notification alerting them to this meeting. Along with that, every alder who had an overhead line that could possibly have a City of Madison tree on it. So I think we, of the 20 alders, I think we sent it to 14 of them. So at least 14 alders were notified that we intend to be doing some sort of pruning in their district.
Okay, and so if you like, I got a postcard this year. I'm in one of these neighborhoods,
Yep.
and I hadn't gotten one before, so I was like, oh, this is interesting. So if you were to prune a tree in front of my yard, for example, would I specifically get another notification either on my door or as a postcard?
No, you would not get another notification if you do not also own a tree that has to be pruned. We, the way it works per PSC chapter PSC 113, our notification would be to the tree owner, which is the City of Madison Streets and Forestry.
So if it's on the median, they're the tree owner. But if it's like one of my trees that's in my yard,
Then,
that you need to prune, then you would notify me.
yes, yep.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, we have two more people who have registered. In Kate Kinzora registered in support and wishes to speak.
I have no other comment beyond what Tim said, so.
Okay, thank you. And then Sandra Ward, wished to speak as well. Sandra?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you. Hello, members of the Habitat Stewardship Subcommittee and MG&E representatives. I'm Sandra Ward, co-chair, along with Grace Hassler of the Capital Neighborhoods Tree Preservation and Planting Committee. Over the years, I've witnessed the damage done to trees when MG&E trimmed trees to protect the public from power failures. I used to blame MG&E for harming the trees. I now have a somewhat more nuanced perspective on the situation and honestly believe that MG&E does its best to limit tree damage, and I am grateful for that. But I wonder whether more could be done to protect our tree canopy. Could both MG&E and this subcommittee work toward influencing city policy in ways that would give trees a better chance of flourishing in our urban environment? Are there ordinances that could be amended to create more space for canopy growth? Perhaps issues such as increasing terrace width to support large trees, not lollipop trees, could be addressed. Could changes in regulations be made so that when an overhead wire is buried, a canopy tree is planted? My hope is that MG&E and this subcommittee could move to the forefront of supporting our urban tree canopy. And I thank you for your consideration.
Well, I'm going to check in, Sandra, and as a tree lover myself, I definitely appreciate your sentiment and exceptional presentation of your thoughts too. Yes, bearing lines, and I'll obviously defer to MG&E for power line issues, but I think we're making progress. And this subcommittee is only an advisory subcommittee. So hopefully, yes, things will resonate with the actual Parks Board. So, yes.
Thank you. Thank
you. Ian, any thoughts or?
No, nothing additional to add. I mean, as Tim had described, we met with them prior to bringing the file forward. We're in support. We're understanding. I mean, this is just kind of the nuance of we live in a heavily urban populated area. It's a community that values trees. I feel confident that we do have a partner in MG&E that understands the community's value of trees. Yet we also have a need for power and safe and reliable access to power. You know, anyone with an electric vehicle, anyone who's, you know, working remotely, as I think most of us on the call are right now, anyone who's accessing power at home expects to be able to have those things. And so there is a balance to be struck. And so I think that's kind of the needle that we're always trying to thread. To Sandy's point, forestry is actively engaged with engineering and other partners around the city to activate habitable tree space where we're able, and actually redeveloping below grade conditions like soil amendment type processes to improve soil conditions when we do have to turn a tree site over. Complete green streets certainly gives us more of a framework to work with from a tree perspective for advocating for greater terrace widths and elevating trees, I guess, in the overall community priority relative to vehicles or parking spaces. So I certainly have an angle on what I would love to see. But I think as far as this file goes, this is something that's being done responsibly, reasonably, with engagement both by the utility as well as the city, and trying to minimize our impacts wherever we can. Now, with that being said, when trees are on a pruning cycle adjacent to electric utilities, there are impacts, visual impacts. And I think that's where historically there has been concern or pushback around those things.
Sure. And exceptional points. I know a lot of folks mention, you know, V trees or bad pruning, what they consider, but those same folks also enjoy having power. So it's kind of a trade-off, you know, Dean. So
And historically, you know, I think, you know, Sean and many on the committee understand as well, like the city and utilities, the trees that are the issue or the greatest visual impairment, those were planted before our generation, right? Yep. Like we're managing the decisions that were made before us. We do not plant in situations like that, large canopy trees right underneath wires anymore. Now, there are canopy impacts to that. So, you know, a place like Jennifer Street, for example, if you lose a large canopy tree, we're going to plant a smaller tree. My position as the city forester has been, let's work with the neighborhoods. And I've done a couple of walks, both in SASE as well as MNA, and actually met with the Capital Improvements Group, too. And really trying to talk about how do we activate private property space where power lines are not an issue, just because the terrace space that I own and operate, I have limited ability to do so. So like those are ongoing conversations, and I am really looking to build a coordinated partnership, public and private, to try and grow Madison's canopy going forward.
Well said. And actually, I do want to give you a pat on the back for the walk you did in the neighborhood, Sassy neighborhood. That was just great connection. There are so many amazing trees in that neighborhood too. Tulip trees, black birch, all sorts of fun stuff. But yeah, thumbs up on that one. So yeah, Sandra, has this helped a bit?
Yes, I know that that Ian Brown as forester is really doing everything that he can. I think we're seeing a difference in terms of the kind of forester that he is. So I am appreciative of that. And of course, I always think, well, maybe we can get a little more. And I'm thinking this is the place, you are the people who might really have an impact. But I do thank you for everything that has been happening in the last couple of years.
Exceptional.
Hey, I appreciate Sandra, this is Tim with Madison Gas and Electric. I believe you have a phone number. If you'd like, you should give me a call at your convenience. I'd like to talk about some of the design changes we made internally here in the last year. I think you would be pleasantly surprised to know of some of the relatively drastic changes we've made. You have my number. Feel free to give me a call at your convenience.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great input. Thank you, Tim.
Looks like so, Kelly has her hand raised.
Yep. Perfect. I'm not seeing that on my screen, but please go ahead.
I think all of you may have answered some of my questions, but in regards to some of the things that Sandra suggested, such as mandating the planting of a canopy tree when power lines go underground, are those kind of things, well, I don't think this subcommittee has much authority in those areas, but are those the kind of things that actually would require a policy, you know, that goes through the city council, or is that just a policy within the forestry division? So Ian, maybe you can answer that.
It's not a formal policy, but I can say that we are absolutely taking those opportunities as they come up. There was actually a redevelopment. I'm blanking on the cross streets, but it was there's a building redevelopment. There were overhead lines that were getting undergrounded, and there were small canopy trees that were under, like four small canopy trees that were underneath that stretch. Three small canopy trees and one poor canopy tree. It was a linden that was pruned fairly heavily, Japanese tree lilac, and two crab apples. And our proposal to that development was, as long as the lines are getting underground, and remove those four trees, activate that plantable space into large canopy species, and let's move forward. Because even though we are removing four living trees, we all know that in practice, they would never grow to a size that would contribute to the overall community canopy. And, you know, that arching where we're going to actually see and realize our benefits. And so we wanted to take that opportunity, because the utility did underground the wires, to really move in the direction that I think the long-term vision of the community is. We want to have large canopy trees wherever we can. We actually just, forestry just ran our numbers on our 2024 planting season, and 90% of the trees that we planted this past year were large canopy species. So clearly we have to maintain them and support them for the decades going forward to actually help them grow to maturity. But we are certainly moving towards planting large trees, the largest trees, wherever we can, working with partners, public and private, to try and make plantable spaces that could support a large canopy tree, and really trying to press as hard as we can on those initiatives.
Thanks, Ian. I'm glad to hear that.
Appreciate it. Brock, you have your hand up?
Can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
Okay. Ms. Ward, I wanted to emphasize what's been said. I think Ian's very approachable. Sounds like MG&E's very approachable. So, you know, definitely take advantage of those opportunities to try to change some things that are existing to improve our city's canopy. At the same time, never hurts to talk to your alder if you have some specific ideas that really do need to go through the Common Council. I'd encourage you to be in good touch with your alder to discuss some of these things as well. So thanks, Ian. Thanks, MG&E. And thanks, Ms. Ward.
Good deal. Thank you, Brock. Brock, you can lower your hand at this point. Any other concerns or comments? Okay, so let's move ahead. Next item on the agenda. Are there any more comments about MG&E? Tim, do you need to address anything?
I don't need to address anything, but I believe there is a motion. You have to pass this as your advisory. You accept it.
Sure. And okay, we can go that route. Would anyone motion to approve?
I move that we approve this proposal by MG&E.
And I will second it.
All right. We've got a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion to approve the MG&E pruning cycle this year for 2025 is approved by this board, advisory board. So, yes. All right, moving on. The next item is land management plan revision.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. That one's me. My name is Chad Hughes.
Hey, Chad.
Hey.
Hey. Welcome and thank you.
You're welcome. I am the operations manager for the City of Madison Parks Department, and I'm here to talk about a small revision we'd like to do to the Madison Parks land management plan. Over the last several years, Parks has focused more resources on sustainability and natural resource management. That's due to a number of factors. We had the formation of the ecology team here in the Parks Department. We created a tier system for our meadows. We've been training staff on natural area management, more of our general park staff on natural area management. And then quite honestly, some of the climate changes that we've seen, some of the mild winters we've seen over the last few years. Have led us to perform more and more work out in these natural areas. Because of that, we'd like to propose a change to the land management plan, specifically the pesticide portion of the land management plan. And I am going to share my screen here. So, hopefully everyone can see my screen that I'm sharing right now. So the current language in the Parks Division Land Management Plan reads chemical methods, including herbicide applications to weeds. That's a kind of a header. And it says herbicide and other pesticide applications will be made only by certified pesticide applicators. What we'd like to do is we'd like to change the language to all employees and volunteers applying pesticides must be state certified or working under the direct supervision of a certified applicator. That language is the identical language that is actually in the City of Madison pesticide policy. So we are just trying to align our land management plan with the City of Madison pesticide policy. And the reason why we are proposing to make this change is with that additional staff out in the natural areas and doing some of this work, we have a limited number of staff there actually have being state certified as pesticide applicators in their job requirements. So we'd like to have the ability with oversight to have mm-hmm. some of our other staff do some herbicide applications. Mostly right now, what we're really looking for is people with the ability to, let's say we're removing, we're working on invasive species like a buckthorn in a large natural area. It's beneficial to, as we cut that buckthorn, to be able to apply the herbicide, like a cut stump treatment immediately on that buckthorn. And with a limited number of certified applicators, that's hard when you have maybe a group of 10 to 12 people out performing this work. So that's our proposal, and I'm ready to take any questions.
Great. Does anyone have questions or input on this one? Kelly, I see you, but yep. cannot hear you.
Okay, yeah. I was just waiting to be called on.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Thanks.
Sorry about that.
So first of all, kudos to Parks for all the revisions of processes that you guys are going through on better land management. I really appreciate it. This aligns with the new language, aligns with the law, and except that I'm not sure that it does in respect to restricted pesticides. So this certainly would apply if you use the word non-restricted pesticides in this statement. I have you, Chad, checked into if this applies to restricted pesticides also, that you can do that without being certified?
You cannot. You do need to be certified to use restricted use pesticides. And you're right, we don't have that language in there, but at the same time, we do not use any restricted use pesticides in the Parks Department. Those okay. are the, it's actually, they aren't very common, quite honestly. Yeah. So that would still apply because, as you said, that is actually the law that you have to be certified to use restricted use pesticides.
Yeah, it just might make it a little bit more acceptable to the general public if it had the words non-restricted use pesticides. You know.
Sure. Yep. We can make that revision.
Great. Appreciate it. Thank you, Kelly. Ian, you have your hand up, I believe.
I do. Just a point of clarity, not relating to weeds. And Chad, I apologize for not talking to you about this before this hearing. But there have been use of restricted use pesticides in park spaces, but it is done by certified forestry applicators. And the context of which is when prior to my arrival in Madison, parks had a adopt-a-tree program for ash trees. And so those were applications of pesticides by private certified applicators to treat park trees that were not a part of the city program. Last year, forestry actually rolled those remaining trees into our citywide right-of-way tree program. And we are using an emamectin benzoate product, which is restricted use, but it is done by certified applicators. They're certified by the state as well as getting additional training from us and the manufacturer. So I have confidence that it's being done in a very safe way. And again, the use of those pesticides allows us to retain the mature ash canopy. And actually this last summer as well, we did treat trees, selected oak trees, with the same pesticide for spongy moth and two-line chestnut borer. So any pesticide use, even if it is restricted use, is done on a very limited basis. Prescriptive application for existing, mature, large canopy trees that no one in the community would want to see succumb to a preventable either disease or pest. And so I guess, well, not related to this specific policy language because it's describing weeds, I just wanted to make sure that everyone was understanding there are restricted use pesticides used on a very, very limited basis in parks, but it's done by forestry staff and their certified applicators.
Fair point. Thanks for the clarification, Ian.
Yeah. And I think that points to Kelly's point that we probably should clarify that language. And we yep. can do that before we push it over to BPC.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chad. Shall we move on? Any more questions or?
Do we need to approve that?
You need to refer this to the Park Commission with a recommendation to approve.
I move we refer it to the Park Commission with the recommendation to approve with the language change referring to non-restricted use pesticides.
I will second that.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion is approved to Thanks, move everyone. It to Parks Commission. Apology. What was that?
I said thanks, everyone.
Okay, right on. Thank you. All right, next thing on the agenda. I'm the worst with tech. I apologize. Are we in Heistead Woods or... I believe
pesticide report.
Okay, thank you. All right, so next item on the agenda is approval of 2024 Parks pesticide report.
Paul, are you here?
Yes, I am. I thought Chad was presenting that. Does anyone have any questions on the pesticide report?
I don't.
Alrighty.
I do. Sorry, I have a lot of questions today. So Paul, I looked through the report and I don't see anything relating to aquatic plants. So can we assume that that means that Parks does not do any applications in aquatic areas?
Currently, that's correct. Yes.
And does that apply to wetlands as well?
Correct. We've only been treating in uplands uplands and adjacent to the shoreline, but not below the high water mark.
Is that a policy or you just haven't had the need to do that?
We haven't had the need. Everything we've treated so far has been upland, or where we have purple loosestrife, it's been up on the banks of areas, which it's very little purple loosestrife we have in the system even. But yeah, we haven't been going after reed canary grass in wetland settings, and we haven't been going after, we didn't go after cattails this past year. There is some Phragmites control that's being done, so that would be the one exception in a wetland in Phragmites. And my understanding is that in the settings that the Phragmites are in, it's covered under the licenses that we have, the certifications. We do want to expand and hire contractors to do more Phragmites and cattail removal in marsh areas. That's yet to come.
Good luck with that one.
Yep. Next question.
I don't see any hands raised. Does anyone have questions for Paul? Okay. Paul, are you satisfied? Should we move on?
I'm satisfied.
You need to approve.
So I'll make a recommendation to approve the Parks pesticide report.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Michelle and Kelly. All those in favor of making a recommendation to recommend something, please approve.
Approved. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Recommendation to approve something is approved. All right. Moving on. And I do appreciate folks that have video on. It makes it feel as if we're all involved in this. So next item, I believe. Heistead Woods. Paul?
Yep. Hi, Stan Woods. So we've completed our habitat management plan for High Stand. We only have a few sites left that we need to create habitat management plans for. So this is another small park. It hadn't received a lot of attention from staff in several years. So it's kind of starting from scratch with this one. It needs a lot of TLC. It's got a lot of challenges. So there's a picture of it on the front page there. I'm going to zoom right to the map here to give you an overview. High Stand Woods is a portion of High Stand Park that's set aside as a conservation park. So you can see the northern end of the park there is conservation park. This area used to be called Radar Hill, apparently, because there was a Air Force radar communications installation on the summit of the hill, kind of like where my cursor is, if you can see that. There's still traces of that. There's an old sign that says federal government that needs to come down, and there used to be some chain link fence separating the conservation park from the general park, and that's been removed now. But that legacy has left us with a kind of poor quality woodland that has a lot of black locust growing in it throughout a lot of the northern portion of the park in general, but particularly along the southern part of the conservation park there. So that's a challenge. Generally, most of the park is dry mesic forest. It has mostly a northwest aspect through a lot of the park, but there's also some areas with some really big old, like, legacy bur oaks in the canopy that have long, their crowns have been greatly reduced over the years, but you can tell they had been open grown. So there's potential to restore some oak woodland under those areas. Those areas still do have somewhat of an intact woodland herbaceous understory with native species, and so those are some things that can be improved upon to retain the natural habitat. Throughout the rest of the area, there's oak mixed in with more mesic species, such as black cherry, some really large hackberries, and then again, like nearly monoculture of black locust in the overstory in the southern end of the park here. The understory was covered with buckthorn and honeysuckle to a large part, and then also due to just lack of management period, there's a huge accumulation of down woody debris in the park. I have some pictures of that as we go through here. So that's the potential for the site, is to restore a little bit of a oak woodland aspect to it. And then also that's just the health of the deciduous forest around that. The way we're intending to manage this is, so the west unit and the east unit proper here are within the conservation park, but we're going to go ahead and cooperate with the rest of parks. I'm claiming this part for conservation parks because it's contiguous with the rest of the forest, and so this management plan will address removing invasive species through this little 2-acre portion of the general park, and underplanting the black locust overstory to eventually change the species composition within this forest area into something more sustainable in the long term. I also point out that the ecology team has been working on removing invasive shrubs from the understory of this area here, which is along the ridge of the drumlin on which the park sits. So they've been clearing out underneath some really big, nice, mature bur and white oaks that are in the canopy, and so that's going to be a really nice restoration as well. So it links to our, you know, efforts across the landscape within this park, so that's kind of nice. The area historically had been, before it was farmed, the early surveys in the 1800s showed a lot of really young bur oaks through the area, suggesting that it had been prairie, but as Native Americans were removed from the area and burning ceased, bur oaks started to get established, sort of, you know, they were the first, like, pioneer species into the into the prairie. And so there's a lot of accounts of just really wide open land with really relatively small burrows in them. Advanced through the 19th and 20th century, a lot of the land on the east side had been converted to agriculture. Pardon me. And then later to subdivisions. And so you get what's left today is these remnant oaks in the canopy with a lot of invasive shrubs in the understory underneath. And so that's where we're at. So like I said, those natural communities, the southern dry mesic forest and oak woodland, are benchmarks that we can restore the site to. You can see some of the large oaks in the canopy here. They're scattered back in the background of this photo. It doesn't really do it justice. You know, go out there and walk around, you'll be impressed. So it's a decent area with a lot of potential, but a lot of challenges in the short term as well. So particularly fire suppression and invasive species. There's garlic mustard in the understory, Dame's rocket, hedge parsley, and then the invasive shrubs that I mentioned. So, pardon me, just close that. So basically, you know, it's pretty straightforward. We want to promote native biodiversity, native species diversity, in a structure that allows the continuation of those both forest and woodland habitats. Here you can see there's been a little bit of work done in the park. 2 winters ago, we hired a contractor to come in and start working on invasive shrub removal on the north face of the drumlin. And so there's a sequence of photos showing that. Sorry for the poor quality. It'll look better on your own computer when you open it up. There's the 2 units the park will be divided into, and then it notes that the portion of the conservation park or the general park will be included in that. Here's some sequences showing the just huge amount of woody debris on the ground. Part of this is just from storm damage over time, you know, and then part of it too is from lack of fire, and part of it's from the dense canopy that's grown up in the absence of fire over the last 150 years. So of all our parks, this one is up there. It seems to be the most extreme in the amount of dead down woody debris on the ground. Even though I've been telling the public lately, this isn't California and we tend to not get wildfires like they do in other parts of the country. Not that it can't happen here, but it would be different here. Of all of our sites, this one has a ton of excess fuel on the ground and could potentially, if it caught fire in a wildfire, it would burn pretty intensely through these piles of slash. So it's a challenge to get that out. Plus they just take up physical space, preventing native species from growing, as well as, you know, creating the more intense burn when we are able to get fuel through the, or fire through the understory. So some areas on the west side of the park are naturally just more open, have less of an accumulation. It's sort of a younger forest on that side where it's filling in around the oak woodland overstory. And so that's more what we're going for, is that aspect and that loading of down woody debris. It's more manageable and more consistent with being able to burn and just walk through it and pull garlic mustard, for example. So our main tasks over the next 5 years would be to get a handle on the invasive herbaceous plants that are in the understory, the usual suspects, burdock, garlic mustard, a lot of biennials. Start treating them in the 2 halves of the park, finish removing all the invasive woody species, start pulling out, managing the woody debris that's in there, chipping it, piling up the smaller stuff, burning it, piling the really large stuff into piles, but still making sure to arrange some bigger pieces of woody debris throughout the park so that there's habitat for a variety of wildlife. Particularly some pollinators that nest within the downed logs over the winter would be a big target for that. And then introducing fire as we're able to the 2 sides of the unit. Planting native seed, particularly some shade-tolerant grasses to be able to get some fuel established until we get the right species composition to have proper, like, enough oak and hickory leaf litter to be able to burn it in the long term. And then ultimately underplanting that black locust stand, rather than removing 2 to 3 acres of black locust canopy. It's a shorter lived species, and although it sort of slows down the growth of a lot of other species under it, people have had success, pardon me, with underplanting the black locust canopy with trees that can withstand a little bit of, that are tolerant of a little bit of shade and will ultimately replace them in the canopy. So it's the 100-year plan for this park, but ultimately it'll be more diverse and sustainable.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
Hey, obviously.
Pretty much it.
I'm sorry, what?
No, that's it. And then the budget averaged $17,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah. Fair point. I have a couple of comments and questions, of course.
Yep.
Obviously, black locust is a challenge in many different ways, but also I think I noticed planting of shellbark hickory, and so obviously the common names are confusing. So Lacinosa for the carrier, or which shellbark?
Yes, I believe that's...
So is that going with the more southern type things? Because that's native to Indiana. That's why I asked.
Yeah. So allowing, planting some of that eventually, planning for climate change, and, counting on them to do well, ultimately.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, I'm sure I'll hear more in the future about that. But yeah, that kind of piqued my interest a little bit. So anyone other questions or comments? Kelly, I see your hand is up. Please go.
Yeah, I'm just curious to how you might get a prescribed burn in an area that's so tight, is so small, and with apartments and houses surrounding it.
Oh, that's what we do.
That's supposed to be a challenge.
The first unit that we're going to burn is the west side of the park, because that's the most, it's the lowest hanging fruit. Because of where it's situated, pretty much we'll have to do it with the north wind, which is challenging. Usually that brings more humid weather for us, but that's what we're going to try to do. That way we'll have the entire park for the smoke to drift through. Another option would be a very light west wind, so that we're able to get enough lift without a lot of drifts sideways. And then in addition, like, there's a ridge here, so that should also, if we can get sufficient fire behavior, that will help the smoke lift up over the ridge, and ideally not just collapse down the other side of it and smoke out the neighborhood over here. So that would be our best case. South wind is kind of out because US 30 is, or Wisconsin 30 is right there. Can't really work with that, so that's a challenge. For the east unit, when we start burning over here, it's going to be the same thing, pretty much relying on a due north wind. So we'll see how that goes. I have been thinking about this and thinking how, like, at some point in the future, I don't know how feasible this would be, but if we can work with, like, I guess it'd be the state police to either not temporarily close, but put up some signs and be able to let some smoke go across 30 during the right time of day, if that's even a possibility. I don't know, but it's the kind of thing we might consider exploring proactively to be able to have any flexibility to manage areas like this in this urban setting within Madison anyway.
Okay, good to hear that you have a plan.
Yeah, at least it's not the interstate. You know, you can't really slow down traffic on that, but yeah.
I have a question. So I was looking at Google Maps to see if this update had been made, but it doesn't look like it had. Does that new pedestrian bridge, does that cross 30 right over here?
It does. Yeah. The bike path, it's the weirdest thing.
And I guess I'm just wondering, like, if it, I don't think it's gonna go through the park, right? Or I don't think it does, but.
It goes through the park here. It comes up from Milwaukee Street. I don't know if, can you see my cursor?
No, not really.
Anyway, actually. It comes up from Milwaukee Street and goes through the park, the southeast portion of the park. Then it follows this engineering greenway out to the east, up to Stein Avenue. It goes all the way around to Thompson, and then it comes back along the edge of Route 30, and it circles up onto a bridge right here, just okay. where it says Highway 30, and it crosses the road there. So Google Maps will be updated soon, I hope, because the bridge is actually there now. But that's where it goes. So it's outside of the conservation park, and it uses the previously existing path within the general park.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I actually biked that 2 weeks ago, so I can vouch that actually exists. So thank you, Paul. And that went up quickly. That's amazing.
It did. Yeah. They were building it. I think it was September. They had started just digging the footings for it. And
yeah.
Okay. It's all open as far as I know.
Yep. All right. Good deal. Any other questions, comments on that one? All right. We will move on. Paul, I think you had another item on the agenda.
Yeah. Scott Nelson is one of our land stewardship technicians.
Okay. And presents. To be fair, I saw the name and I thought, not the Scott Nelson, obviously MG&E, but welcome, Scott. Thank you for being here. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. I am the host has stopped my video, so I am not able to share it right now. But I am, in fact, the Scott Nelson.
What? That's
probably not the one that you were thinking of.
Scott, well, you can share your video
Scott
now.
Nelson, so.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was having a few technical difficulties, so I had some difficulty getting into the meeting earlier, but I'm glad that I've been able to be here.
Exceptional. Thank you.
So I am one of the land stewardship technicians on the ECO team. I've been working with the city for a little over a year and a half now. And one of the projects that the ECO team has been working on over the course of the last couple of years has been trying to add some technical definitions and details to our evaluations of the quality of each of the natural area sites that we work in. So primarily managed meadows and woodlands, but also savannas and some wetlands. And so in order to do that, we have developed a system of we have developed some scorecards where we came up with several metrics to be able to walk through a site and have some criteria that we can use to say why we have called a site a high quality tier, a low quality tier, or in between. So we call this our scorecard system, and I can, am I able to share my screen so that I can show you?
Yeah, I'll make you a co-host quick, okay? Just you have to accept it and then you can share. There you go.
Okay. Let's see. All right. So is everyone able to see the meadow savanna scorecard here?
Yep.
All right. So this is this is the scorecard we developed for our more open habitats. We have a slight modification of it for more densely wooded areas, but our goal here was to have metrics that we could evaluate fairly rapidly, so we're not spending too much of our time evaluating habitat quality, because that's not really our primary mission. Our primary mission on the eco team is to do active restoration. So we don't want to spend too much of our time on this, but we did think that it could be valuable to have some meat to behind our tier evaluations. So in each of our parks, we have, you know, somewhere between 1 and, I don't know, 16 units. They're every natural area in the park gets its own is its own unit that we track work in independently, and we assign a tier quality to each unit. And so this the scorecard allows us, you know, we have multiple units in each column, and we can fill out multiple sheets if we need more, you know, for parks that have many units. What we do here is we're trying to get a broad percentage of what percentage of the site is covered in native graminoids, like grasses and sedges, very rarely rushes, and then what percentage of the unit is covered in native forbs, so flowering non-woody plants, and then non-native grasses, non-native forbs, and then what percentage of the site is covered in a woody understory, and then what percentage of the site is large trees, and then more specifically, what percentage of the site is oak trees, because it's a keystone species in meadows, oak woodlands, and oak savannas, so they're of particular interest. So that those metrics are sort of the backbone of the evaluation. It gives us a sense of, is this area dominated primarily by native species that we're trying to promote, or is it more dominated by invasive species, so it requires more work, which is broadly the main thing we're looking at when we're evaluating the tier of an area. But then things like how many oaks are there can kind of bump up a TR evaluation of a site's quality. And then oak regeneration gives us a sense of whether any babies are coming up. So in a lot of areas, there are these massive oaks, like Paul was talking about earlier, but there are no young ones that are able to take their place when they inevitably die. So we want to know, is there any new regeneration? And then we have a couple things like fuel, how much fuel is there to be able to carry a fire, to give us a sense of how ready a place is to be able to be burned. We track of what kind of tree species there are, recommendations, notes, and then down here, in the target plant species, these are where we write down exactly which invasive plants are on each unit or in each unit, and how much of each invasive plant there is. And that can give us a sense as we conduct these evaluations over time, we can give us a sense of how well we're doing in reducing the abundance of specific invasive species. We right now we're trying to get a broad overview in as many sites as we can, Just before we do our work in a site or right afterwards, we'll try and get in there and do a site evaluation. And then hopefully we can get an evaluation in each of these sites every 2 to 3 years or so, so we can get a sense of our trajectory of progress.
So Scott, yeah, that's incredible. And I really, truly, personally appreciate that. did that report go out to all of us?
So there isn't an official report at this point. I have the scorecard spreadsheet here, which I would be happy to share more broadly.
Apologize for interrupting, but
no worries.
My comment is, this is to me amazing, a lot of information, and you presented it well, but to have it in advance would have been ideal for me, at least. I'm very intrigued. So yes, if you could distribute that to the group, I personally would appreciate that.
Absolutely. I'll work on getting that out to the group in the coming days.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I see that Brock has his hand up. Brock?
Hey, Scott. Thanks for enlightening us on how you do this. Amazing amount of information to collect, and if you can collect it quickly, so much the better. Refresh my memory, Scott and Paul. The ECO team works citywide, right? It's not an east-west kind of team. You're working on all the parks?
That's correct. Yes. We work in every park where there are natural areas. So not every park has, the kind of habitat that we would actually go into. And we do prioritize our work at least somewhat based on the tier quality of the sites. So even some parks that have natural areas, if the natural areas are of low quality, we might not visit there very often, except perhaps for an annual mowing mid-season to keep down to stop the weeds from flowering, if there are some weeds that need to be tamped down. But yes, we're headquartered at Goodman in the central unit, but we work citywide.
Thank you. And you've anticipated my next question. And that is, we never have enough resources to go around. And so I was going to ask how you prioritize which parks get the most attention when you don't have enough funding to get at everything that Paul has outlined for all the various parks that he's presented on. That must be a tough job to prioritize that.
It is a tough job, and having this tier system really helps with that prioritization, because for our highest quality sites for the last two growing seasons that we've been using this system, we've made sure that they get a thorough site visit every growing season. So that represents about 10% of the acreage that we manage. We make sure that we've absolutely gotten to those sites, and sometimes we have two visits to those sites during a growing season. But almost as important, and as we work on eking out the last weeds, the last remnants of invasive plants in those highest quality sites, which, since we've been working on them for a couple of years, we're seeing progress, and the small amounts of invasive plants that were there are getting reduced. More and more, we're able to shift our attention to that second tier down, the ones that are kind of on the cusp of being highest quality, but they're still not quite there yet. And so that's our second priority. And we've been able to get to most of that acreage at least once per year during the growing season. And that represents, I think about, I could look at the exact numbers, but about another 10%, closer to 15% of the total acreage that we work in. And then we have also gotten to some of the kind of next level down as well. But then once you're talking about the lowest quality sites, then we're really just evaluating, are there some of the highest priority weeds present that we need to be able to knock back, or is there woody brush that needs to be controlled, you know, maybe every other year? And that's something that we're kind of feeling out over time. And we've been refining our process in communication with supervisors across the city. So it definitely is a challenge prioritizing it all, but I think that we're working towards locking down and kind of protecting our highest quality areas, and then pushing that boundary out over time and getting more and more acreage into that top tier.
Yeah, if I could add, as you probably know, the conservation parks get capital funding each year. It's a program versus a project, so that's renewed. And so the council 2 years ago approved $110,000 a year to put toward the managed meadows. And so we're able to hire contractors now to focus on some of those tier two meadows to improve them to a tier one, so that Scott and his coworkers can maintain them from there. So that's been a big boost as well.
Good to hear about these. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brock. Thank you.
Good to hear about these processes, because I get questions every once in a while from somebody who lives adjacent to a park or visits a park and says, you know, I haven't seen much work going on here lately. You know, how do they pick and choose where they're going to work with the funds they have? So good to hear about the process. Thanks.
Yeah, I wish that we could be everywhere at once. Over the course of a career, we'll end up everywhere. But Oh, I could also add that with the contract work, in some of the places that we have contracted, we've not only used the ecological quality as a factor, but also how heavily trafficked an area is. So some of our bigger projects, not all of them, but some of our bigger projects, we've focused on community parks. So.
Nice. I see Kelly has a hand up, but I would first like to ask, how many here know exactly what the eco team is? Scott, maybe you could address that.
My question was, Sean.
Yeah, fair enough. And I'm going to dovetail that into, Habitat Stewardship Subcommittee. It's actually Madison Tree Board, and I'm the chair of it. I don't even know what the eco team is. And to be fair, let's see. There's another thing called the Urban Tree Task Force. Yeah, just found out about it. So anyway.
I can take that.
The eco team? So
the eco team is, it's been an evolution. We used to have a position on each side of town, east and west, who that person basically like rode on the mower all summer and would brush mow some of these areas that we had taken out of turf in the 80s to save money. And so they turned into either patches of brush or patches of invasive weeds. And so we maintain the status quo for 30 years by just mowing them once a year or doing the bare minimum. And so as vacancies opened and that position was refilled, we tailored the duties of that position. And then we added in our landscapers as well. Gardener is their payroll title. Put them together on a team to be able to serve citywide the park system, to manage these no-mow areas as managed meadows and have an ecological focus on them. And so Scott and his counterpart Laurel spend the time in these managed meadows doing what Scott has described. And then in addition to that, we have two employees that take care of our signature sign beds and then native plantings, rain gardens, things like that. Landscaped horticultural areas within the parks. And so their focus has been on rejuvenating some of those plantings, converting them more native species and making them more sustainable in the long run, both ecologically and easier to maintain with a different selection of species that can have a, you know, longer lifespan before you need to redo that garden bed, landscape bed. And they're led by Megan McCrum, who's a lead worker. And so she ties it all together and coordinates all that. So that's what the eco team is. It's a coordination across the three general park sections. And they also cooperate with the conservation parks as well. And so together we have a 10-person burn crew between both of those teams. And we're able to bring fire to more of the park system than we ever have. And have the capacity to handle large groups of volunteers now and direct them where parks can benefit the most. So hopefully that answers your question.
That's great to hear that, Paul, especially having the 10-person burn crew. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
And just to add a little bit of detail to specifically what we do as land stewardship technicians, in addition to this monitoring data that I was talking about with the scorecard, we also our main task is to go in and remove invasive species. And we do that through use of judicious use of herbicide during the growing season. It's mostly foliar applications, where you have a list of invasive species that will spray and put up proper signage, and then during certain times of the year, especially that peak flowering, we have large mowing tractors that will go through the lower quality areas and just mow down, pre-flowering plants. And then during the winter season, it's the primary brush clearing season. And so we'll pick a variety of parks during that time to cut down buckthorn and honeysuckle, our main invasive species, but also a few other things. We'll do cut stump treatments on them to make sure that they don't grow back, to increase the amount of light that hits the ground, the forest floor. And then during the fall and the spring, as Paul was saying, we burn, which reduces invasive weeds, increases bare soil that we can seed into, and then increase the amount of native plant abundance and diversity in the area, and try and not just be killing invasive weeds, but replacing them with plants that are more desirable and provide more, not only aesthetic value for people, but habitat quality for insects and other wildlife.
Great. I see Brock has the hand up.
Yeah, Brock. I ran into some contractors recently in one of the parks, specifically working on honeysuckle and buckthorn. Is that typical for a lot of the parks, or you find you have a little extra money, or is that budgeted in early on in the process?
There are a couple different sources of funding that we draw on. The first one is the $110,000 per year of capital funding. We're kind of currently in the process of choosing which projects to fund in our second out of 5 years that we've been giving that funding for. And some of those projects are brush clearing projects, but actually a lot of the brush clearing a large portion of the brush clearing contracts that we've had come from a separate pot of money that we got through the planning committee. There's money available to manage certain rain gardens and sort of stormwater management units. And when there's leftover money from that at the end of the year, we can push that into to contractors to do some brush clearing work.
Thanks.
Good deal. I am checking to see if other folks have hands up. Would anyone else like to question or comment? Yeah, well, Scott, very nice to meet you. You are now Absolutely. The new Scott Nelson. I'm just saying. But very nice to meet you. Yeah, we should connect at some point. I definitely have questions for you. And yeah, I appreciate it. So,
yeah, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, right on. Well, I mean, yeah, obviously we are all trying to do good here. So I appreciate seeing everyone. And yeah, it's a rare moment that we all get together and do some good. So I appreciate that. All right. And I am multitasking and I'm the worst at it. So I do apologize, but any informational updates on things, or have we gone to the end of the agenda?
Sean, I will try to connect a camera up to my computer one of these years.
Sounds good.
We have an informational update on the city's board committee and commission streamlining project. That's okay. The last item on the agenda.
Sounds great. Who is presenting that?
Evening. My name is Isaac Mathias. I'll be discussing this. I'm the legislative analyst for the Office of the Common Council, here to give you, as you just heard, an update on our boards, committees, and commissions streamlining efforts. I believe you all should have received an email from Deputy Mayor Christy Baumel on December 23rd that had a memo. It was addressed from the mayor and council president, Figueroa Cole. If you all didn't, I trust that you all got it, but if not, it's also attached to this item in Legistar in case you wanna reference it. But just to give a little bit of background, for several years, many years now, the Common Council has been working on this plan to both improve and streamline our BCC process. Began with, some of you may be familiar with, the Task Force on Government Structure in 2017. So now we're on kind of year 8 of this this process. We had a couple different goals. Mainly, it's for the size and the functions of Madison's BCC system to enable things like adequate staffing per committee, a really clear and efficient path for residents to engage in the legislative process, and efficiency in city processes and decision making. And throughout this project, we've kind of taken a bunch of different approaches. It's included reviewing mission statements, activity data, getting input from alders, and lots of discussion with staff. And kind of as a result, we're proposing a series of recommended changes to BCCs all throughout the city based on this work. And so tonight, specifically talking about one of those, which is a proposal to move the citywide urban forestry review. It's commonly known as tree board responsibilities. I think it was item 4 on the agenda tonight falls under those, and moving them to the Board of Public Works. I thought I saw Superintendent Romines here earlier, but he might not.
I'm here.
Oh, Perfect. In case, I don't know if you want to discuss some of the rationale behind the staff recommendation, I'm happy to also, but.
Sure, I can. So some of you are probably, well, again, I'm Charlie Rollmines. For those of you that I haven't met, I'm the streets and urban forestry superintendent. For those of you who aren't aware, I was in parks previously with forestry. In January of 2018, I moved over to streets, and in January of 2020, the forestry work group moved from parks to streets. So we're on our, well, we've been 5 years now with this arrangement. I think that forestry being part of the Board of Parks Commissioners kind of food chain, if you will, was probably a function of the fact that forestry was part of the Parks Division forever and a day. However, certainly in my time, and both in the park side, now on the street side, the majority of the issues that the public wants to speak to when it comes to urban trees tend to align more with right-of-way related issues, specifically street reconstruction projects, private developments that touch then the right-of-way, things of that nature, which really tend to heavily move towards the Board of Public Works. And so having the tree board function, which I'm sure many of you are aware, primarily, if not almost exclusively, is related to MG&E pruning permits and then also the occasional house move. But again, even most of that impacts the public right-of-way much more so than parks. So given that the forestry work group has moved over to the streets division for 5 years now, and that intersection of where the public by and large interacts with forestry in a way that has to do with boards and commissions more closely aligns with the Board of Public Works, we've made this recommendation to move the tree board from Habitat Stewardship and house it within the Board of Public Works. Now, it should be noted that that does not mean at all that anything related to trees wouldn't come through Board of Park Commissioners and Habitat Stewardship Subcommittee. So anytime that there is tree work being done in the parks or in park managed lands, that would still be the jurisdiction of the Board of Park Commissioners. And to the extent they've passed that through to this subcommittee, that work would happen here still. That's the rationale. I wanted to make sure you all are very clearly understand when it comes to trees in the parks and parks managed lands, that's still here. This is the tree board, which again, primarily functions on pruning permits and the house moves, that type of thing would be moving over to Board of Public Works, which again is where mostly people interact with the urban forest when it comes to boards and committees. So with that, happy to answer any questions you all might have. Great, and I'm gonna speak up. Charlie, it was nice to see that you were included in this, and obviously the distinction between streets and parks was a little intriguing why you were here, but I'm glad. I know there was a house moving 4 months ago. I don't have the exact date. And normally this, subcommittee is informed of that. And I don't think we were. It was East Dayton.
It was possibly on the agenda. It wasn't on the agenda, but
okay,
a year ago or so.
All right. I retract that. Actually, I saw one a few months ago. So, okay. Anyway, yes, consolidating and figuring things out is great. Thank you, Charlie. I'm on my phone, so about to die, so I apologize. Please go on.
No, that's all I had. If anyone else has any questions or concerns, happy to address those.
Yeah, I have one question. This seems to make a lot of sense to transfer those responsibilities. One of the responsibilities of this subcommittee has been to look over the list of new street trees that forestry is proposing to either start growing or purchasing. And I think it's important that we have people with some ecological background and background on invasives, especially, that have a chance to look those over. So where would that approval go through, or that review go through with this?
Sure. So the review of that list would still run through Board of Public Works as it relates to the right of way. Certainly, Board of Park Commissions and through that the Habitat Stewardship Subcommittee could certainly advise and weigh in on any approved planting lists in parks. And I would say that, Board of Public Works, obviously a public meeting. So anyone who wants to come to that meeting and weigh in and agree or disagree with anything Ian would be putting on that list would be able to do that. And I would say that we're in the process of, there's a open seat on the Board of Public Works, and so we're working on getting that filled with someone who has background in urban trees, as well as they do have a landscape architect on that board currently.
I hear Sean's not on enough committees yet.
Well, you know what, Charlie, I will send an email, because yeah, that's on my life list. So nice. Awesome. Michelle, you have a question?
More just a comment. This was presented to the Board of Park Commissioners last month. And I mean, really, it's one of the only ones that are really affecting the Board of Park Commissioners. Just wanted to share that, there was support from the Park Commission on this. And I think, especially with the public comment that we heard earlier this meeting of, how can we work to improve our tree canopy and make sure that we are doing this needed maintenance, but as well as maintaining and improving our tree canopy. I think this will just make that whole process a little bit easier by just putting it within the unit of government that that really works on the management of trees. So especially street trees, as they have a huge impact on our tree canopy. So thank you for doing this work. I know it can be a lot to look at government departments and see where we can make it efficient, but I appreciate it.
Well said. Thank you, Michelle. So any other input, considerations? I think we've come to the end of the agenda, and obviously it's getting late, but I personally appreciate everyone's input. And Isaac, nice to meet you. And, good to see other folks, obviously Charlie and yes. So
thank you all.
Yeah. So I think we can move to adjournment.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Who's got a second? Oh, maybe Kelly. Sorry for laughing. Kelly, is that a second?
Sure.
Awesome. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Enjoy. Thank you so much for